Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, competing rebel factions in Syria are increasingly attacking each other in a series of killings, kidnappings and beheadings. Syria rebel infighting has intensified a lot over the last couple of days. Hello again and welcome back. Now, today we're delighted to be joined in the studio by a well-established political scientist. Dr. Mohammad Hassanhani, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Central Stage.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure to be here with you.
Thanks very much for being with us. Now, let me just tell you that Dr. Mohammad Hassanhani is an academic staff member of the Faculty of Politics and Islamic Studies at Imam Sadegh University, and a fellow researcher at the Institute for Political and International Studies. Time for a short break, but after the break, we'll be talking about actually Syria and the latest development there, including, of course, the infighting between the Syrian rebels. So please do stay with us.
Infighting between the so-called Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, that is the ISIL militants, and rival militant groups in Syria has intensified since early January 2014 and has now spread across northern Syria. According to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, nearly 500 people, including 85 civilians, have been killed during infighting among foreign-backed militants in Syria since January 3rd. The group added that 157 people were from the Al-Qaeda-affiliated ISIL, 240 from other militant groups, and 85 were civilians. ISIL, which includes mostly foreign fighters among its ranks, has its roots in Al-Qaeda's Iraqi affiliate and first appeared in the Syrian conflict in late spring last year. According to extracts from British defense consultancy IHS, Jane's published in the Daily Telegraph, some 100,000 militants are operating in Syria. The study shows that the militants have split into some 1,000 bands since the Syria crisis began, which is based on intelligence estimates and interviews with militants. Around 10,000 of the militants, with many being foreign nationals, are fighting for groups affiliated with Al-Qaeda, such as the Al-Nusra Front, and the rest fight for different militant groups. In the meantime, Geneva II peace talks is approaching, with the UN setting January 22, 2014 as a date for the Syrian peace talks. The conference will open in the Swiss city of Montreux on January 22nd before moving to the UN office in Geneva on January 24th. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has said that Iran is ready to help end the Syrian crisis, but it would not accept any preconditions for attending the Geneva II conference. Iran's potential participation has drawn lots of international support, which is indicative of the impact Iran can make on the success of Geneva II if it attends.
Hello again and welcome back. Now, since almost a fortnight ago, fierce clashes have erupted between members of the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Nusra Front and militants belonging to the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant or ISIL or ISIL in the Syrian city of Raqqa. I think, Dr. Hani, that's really very weird, isn't it? Because we know that in April 2013, these two militant groups were even about to merge.
Yes, that was, of course, it was not a surprise for whom who are following the events on the ground. I mean, I personally, myself, I was somehow, I was looking for an explanation that why and how this kind of infight clashes yes. could erupt. The problem here is that we are witnessing a variety of groups, militants,
yes.
who are fighting for so many different reasons. And the only common reason that they are fighting for is to getting the power, to toppling the regime, mm. the Bashar Assad regime, and taking the power. But on the rest of the issues, they are very, very divided. So in that sense, it was not a surprise to me, actually, to see that we are now reaching this point in which a war within a war is now happening.
And you know, two groups which claim to be affiliated to Al-Qaeda.
Yes, both of them. Yes. But as I said, I mean, they are not united in yes. many fronts. The mm-hmm. only thing that is uniting them is getting mm. to power and toppling the Bashar Assad regime, and now they are fighting each other, and it shows the this fact, this bitter mm. fact, that how the predictions of the foreign powers and the regional powers in Syria were terribly wrong,
right.
and went terribly wrong mm. in terms of now we are witnessing a real disaster in which a real civil war is fighting out between different groups and even between those groups that who mm-hmm. are supposed to be a united front fighting against the central government.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, I've also been told that now we're delighted to be also joined by Professor Hushang Hassanyari, who is Professor of International Relations and Political Science at the Royal Military College of Canada, Ontario. Professor Yari, it's a pleasure to have you with us on Central Stage.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure for me too.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, Professor, we know that the rebel-on-rebel fighting in Raqqa, a stronghold of the Al-Qaeda linked group known as the Islamic State in Iraq, and the Levant reflects a widening war within a war in Syria. And this one, of course, against radical extremists. Now, some analysts believe that this adds yet another layer of complexity to the broader Syrian conflict less than 2 weeks ahead of a planned international peace conference.
Indeed, the situation in Syria is getting complicated by day. When everything started, the ordinary Syrian people wanted really very few, very mild also political reform. When the Assad regime refused to do that, consequently the violence started, and then that created really a very great opportunity for those people who wanted to advance their own cause, the Islamist extremist cause, creating or recreating a kind of caliphate and so forth. So when the Americans get out of the Iraqi territory,
right.
that creates even a bigger opportunity mm-hmm. for those groups, and then they came or they went to Syria from all over the world, including from some European countries, but mainly from Arab countries, those Salafis, those who believed in Al-Qaeda ideology, a number from Afghanistan, from Chechnya, and so forth. So that created a huge opportunity mm-hmm. For the violent groups who were defeated to some extent in
right.
Afghanistan and then Iraq to go to Syria and basically to do what they are doing now. And that obviously mm-hmm. Created a very humanitarian really disaster with close to now the UN is talking about 9 million Syrians were in urgent need of food, more close to 7 million displaced in Syria, close to 3 million refugees and so
right.
forth. So that is the picture, and the danger is that more the conflict drags on, we will see more intervention by the outside forces, and consequently more complicated, and as you say, more layers added to the already very complex situation.
Right, but you know, Professor, probably we could have imagined a sort of infighting, you know, among certain groups with different ideologies. But we know that these two groups, as we just talked to, you know, Dr. Khani, these two groups in April 2013 were even about to merge. So did you expect that to happen? I mean, infighting between these two Al-Qaeda-related factions?
In regards to the two groups that we are talking about, I believe, if the memory serves me well, there was a kind of order from Al-Zawahiri on the Pakistani-Afghani border, asking them not to merge, and that was seen as one of the main problems that those two groups that now they are going through. The other thing is, as my colleague mentioned earlier, these are the groups really that they don't have allegiance and loyalty to anybody. What they are interested in is to advance their own cause, and the causes from one group to the other is extremely different. They use the same pretext, Islam, and they use the same context, Afghanistan, Iraq, or Syria, or Yemen to some extent, in order to basically to do what they want to. And if you look at those groups, in many cases, they are very confused, really, young, sometimes educated people, who are brainwashed and who are looking for they want to defend the Muslims, they say, and they don't know, or they know that the people who are fighting against, they are Muslims too. So consequently, it shows really that what is prevailing is not a very clear ideology or a very clear strategy that governs those the fighting of those groups. And this is the kind of mess that we are living in, and unfortunately, the entire region is has to deal with if they succeed to create even a very small government on a small territory in Syria. That would be a challenge to everybody.
Right. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, as Professor Yari just said, the infighting has spread across provinces, and we know that this has actually caused, you know, lots of supply shortages, and the UN has warned of a disastrous humanitarian situation in Syria's Yarmouk camp, for example, which is a residential area home to Palestinian refugees and Syrians. There have also been numerous reports, unfortunately, of people starving to death in the neighborhood. There are also reports, Dr. Khani, of women actually dying, you know, while giving labor. And we've had the pictures of some very young children actually starving to death. Who would have thought it had come to this?
Well, these are really tragedy, and it's very sad to see what's happening now. Again, I think there are a number of reasons for what we are witnessing these days in Syria. Dr. Hassan Yari mentioned the fact that the Syrian government didn't act in time in terms of, I mean, political reform.
Yes.
Maybe we can talk about this, and this could be one of the reasons, but in my view, the most important reason for what we are seeing now is what I call it miscalculation of the Western governments, especially United States,
right,
and some regional powers such as Saudi Arabia and Turkey. Their calculation was based on this issue that Assad regime is going to fall in a matter of months, if not weeks.
Right.
And that didn't happen. And they invested so much that they didn't want to somehow get back or set back.
Right.
So they continued to support the militants and the oppositions who just poured to the country from different countries, different nationalities. We are talking about dozens of different nationalities now fighting in Syria.
Right.
So now we are witnessing somehow a dilemma, which is very difficult to solve it. And even now, in spite of the fact that they know Iran could be helpful if invited to the Geneva II talks, still they are somehow refraining from letting it happen, and they are persisting on the mistakes that they have made. And unfortunately, as you rightly mentioned, this is the Syrian people, the innocent Syrian people, civilians, women and children in this bitterly cold season who are paying the price.
But you know, the thing is that actually Kerry has said that Iran could play a role in the sidelines of the conflict
yes,
so far.
Yes, they want Iran to be part of the solution, and because basically they know that Iran can play a very positive role in this regard. But they want the solution to be somehow that of their own interest. They want a solution that serves their long-term interest, and this is it's not going to happen, simply.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we were talking about some other aspects of this serious state of affairs in Syria. So please do stay with us. Hello again and welcome back. Now, according to the extracts from British defense consultancy IHS, James, published in the Daily Telegraph, I just want to read some very interesting figures. Some 100,000 militants are operating in Syria. Probably that's not very odd, but the interesting part of the information is that the most interesting point, I think, is that the militants have split into some 1,000 brands since the Syria crisis began. Now, Professor Yeri, apart from what the political allegiances of these 1,000 brands, I think one look at the list of the militant groups in Syria shows how many vested interests are at play in Syria.
Indeed. When I was talking, if I go back to the, just to raise a point that Dr. Khani mentioned, when I was criticizing the Syrian government, I went back to the beginning of the whole thing, really. And if the government was intelligent enough, would resolve the problem internally. And then when it wasn't the case, it created a good opportunity for Saudi Arabia, for Qatar, for Turkey, for some Western countries, and so forth to intervene. The problem is really that with this figure of 1,000 groups, this shows very clearly that this is a disaster really coming. Imagine for a moment that these groups run 1,000 parts of the Syrian territory. And obviously, when we talk about Syrian territory, we also talk about the countries bordering Syria. We already see the impact of the crisis in Syria in Iraq. We saw that in the past and continue to see that in Lebanon, obviously, and Turkey. Israel, for now, is somehow immune from this situation, but God knows for how long. So there is an emergency, really, for everybody involved to get together in order to address this issue. The problem is the Syrian crisis has now regional and international ramifications. We see that the question has become quite quickly Shia-Sunni in fighting, and that created obviously different camps in the region. We know that Iran and Hezbollah are supporting the Assad regime for their own good reasons. The Saudis, the Qataris, and now less Turkey than before, they are supporting different groups for their own reasons. And Americans, British, French, they also doing the same. But the good news in this very, very bad and very sad, dark situation is that the Americans and the British, the Westerners in general, they realize that they should not send arms to the opposition, the so-called Syrian opposition groups, those who are Syrians and who are not imported from other countries. And that creates some kind of stability in a very unstable situation, meaning that imagine that if the Americans, Brits, French, and so forth, they endorsed or adhered to the idea of Saudi Arabia by arming those opposition groups, what would be the situation today? So despite this very murky situation, I believe there is a possibility to try to salvage somehow Syria from further destruction. Already we know it takes really decades for the Syrians to rebuild the country, if ever they can, because some of the human heritage is already destroyed by the most extremist elements, but also somehow, sometimes by the bombardments, use of planes by the government. So there is a hope now in the Geneva too, but we can elaborate on that further, the role that Iran might or might not play and so forth, if the time permits.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, Dr. Khani, before we talk about the Geneva II talks, I mean, one of the numbers, one of the figures given by the British consultancy, I think, was quite interesting, and that was that basically 1,000 brands of militants are operating in Syria. So what do you think that indicates, this great number?
Well, I'm not sure about the how accurate is this number. Maybe a little bit of exaggeration, 1,000. But definitely there are dozens of big groupings. I mean, we can have this classification in terms of the routes, the support lines, and the allegiances of each group. So it is a scene in which a huge number of different groups are fighting for different causes, and as I said, the only main common cause is toppling the Bashar Assad regime. You know, it reminds me of Afghanistan during what we are seeing now in Syria in many ways, reminding me of Afghanistan during the 80s, when Mujahideens were fighting pro-Soviet regime in Kabul. And the only big difference is the fact that when they were fighting the Kabul regime, I mean, the communist regime, they were really united. And we had these divisions right after the collapse of the central government. So the Taliban came, the North Alliance came. I mean, we witnessed the, somehow the diversity and the division between these different groups. And it's not happening now here in Syria. And it's somehow surprising that how they can justify in fighting when they are still have this common cause, and which is the fighting the central government.
But probably it has to do with the interests involved. I mean, the point that I'm trying to make is that, I mean, of course, the British consultancy said that the information is based on the interviews, one part of the information, in the interviews actually with the militants themselves. But I think this really, the sheer great number of the different brands of the militants probably shows that there are lots of interests involved in fighting Syria. They should be, you know, following, searching for something in Syria. Otherwise, it wouldn't have made sense to be active in Syria.
That could be a good explanation. Again, comparing with Afghanistan during the 80s, we had a united front of Islamic countries and Arab countries. Even in that sense, Iran and Saudi Arabia had very, very little differences in that sense. But now we see how different are the Muslim world and the Arab world. And even within each section, each sect, we are so many different brands or so different, many different branches who are supporting their own causes. Yes, I do believe that one of the most important complexities of the Syrian crisis is the fact that here we are so many different players,
right,
regionally, internationally, and domestically involved. Mm-hmm. And each one is representing its own somehow faction.
Right. And Dr. Khaninat, to talk about the upcoming conference on Syria, which is actually hoped to put an end to this really sorry state of affairs in Syria. We know that there have been a large number of players supporting Iran's potential participation. For example, we had the German foreign minister, we had the UN secretary general, we had Lakhdar Brahimi, we had
Russians,
lots of players supporting, but there are a couple of cases where we see some players are hesitant, about Iran's participation. Why do you think?
There are two reasons, in my view.
Right.
There are two explanations that why the United States is so reluctant to accept Iran as somehow
a full participant.
Yes, a full participant. Number one is the fact that if Iran appears in full capacity in the Geneva II talks, again, it will be somehow an emphasis on the role that Iran can play regionally.
Right.
And this is something that United States is not going to accept that easy.
Right.
I mean, for the decades, United States have been depriving Iran from playing the role, the proper and the appropriate and constructive role that Iran had been ready to play. So if somehow now accepts this full capacity of Iran appearing in the Geneva II talks, that should be somehow could be read as a defeat for the United States or maybe a withdrawal from the previous position.
Right.
The reason number two is the fact that somehow being in the Geneva II talks, besides Russia, it will boost somehow psychologically the Syrian government's spirits. I mean, Syrian government will not feel somehow alone, and that will somehow make somehow an imbalance or change the balance in favor of Syria, Russia. So an alliance between Syria, Russia, and Iran, and if Iran somehow comes to the Geneva II talks, that could somehow change the balance of power in the Geneva talk scenario. So that could be another reason that why United States is not that willing to accept Iran to appear there.
Thanks very much for those two reasons given. Now, we know that former British Foreign Secretary and the present member of the UK Parliament, Jackie Straw, has called for Iran's participation in the upcoming international talks on the crisis in Syria. And Professor Yari, I just want to mention one of the things he said. He said last Wednesday, quote, "We believe very strongly that the solution to the terrible situation in Syria is only possible with the full involvement of the Islamic Republic of Iran." But as we just discussed here in the studio, apart from widespread support for Iran's participation by many international players, there are also a couple of cases where we see certain players are hesitant about Iran's participation. So what's your explanation on that?
I believe the fact that Iran is somehow involved in Syria makes it harder for some countries, including the U.S., to accept the full participation of Iran. Although I should add that the Americans are not entirely against. As you know, when Kerry and Lavrov plus Ebrahimi had a press conference in Paris, I believe it was yesterday, Kerry mentioned that they are interested in having Iran around the table, but they he added the condition that from the American perspective should be observed by Iran. And the condition is that Iran should accept the result of Geneva I. The Geneva I was very clearly asking about the departure of Assad from the power. So if Iran, based on what we hear from the Iranian officials, they are against such a decision, that would create really a kind of coup de sac where there is no way get out of this situation. So I believe it's basically the reason is it turns around this idea of Geneva II to be simply a follow-up to the Geneva I. What the constructive role, in my view, that Iran can play now is to discuss the issue, if they don't do that already, to discuss the issue with the Assad regime, to tell them that, especially to Mr. Assad, that the situation is would be extremely difficult, really, for everybody to live with Assad at the helm of the Syrian government. A compromise could be reached by Assad removing himself from the power, but a number of his confidants to remain in the so-called transition government, meaning that Assad or Assad-like-minded people, they continue to be part of the solution, part of the new Syria, in order to put an end to two things, basically. Right. The first one is further destruction of Syria, and the second one, maybe more as important as the first one, is to block the advance and the progress of these very, very extremist, really, elements, foreign elements that are fighting in Syria. Okay. And as I indicated earlier, the only thing that is going to satisfy them is really to dominate the entire region and run the region based on their understanding of Islam. And finally, if just a sentence about the sheer number of different groups and why they are claiming the same thing, they continue to fight in each other. I believe, unfortunately, in Islam, like in other religions, you have so many interpretations of what Islam is about. So they are, their interpretation is not necessarily the same as their sister groups and so forth. And that could explain, at least partially, why those groups are fighting each other.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, we'll take a short break, and after the break, it's time for Central Stage Online Search. So please do stay with us. Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now it's time for Central Stage Online Search, where we go on the internet for you to pick for you what's taken central stage over the course of the last week. So we're going to, Dr. Hani, have a look at some of the interesting web pages. The first one's from Press TV website, 500 killed in Syria, infighting escalation. So the interesting point is that just look at those militants. I mean, they normally cover their face. I don't know what the reason behind that is.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange. I mean, there is a war going on, and in the war, there is no need. But I don't know, maybe for...
They don't want to be recognized, probably.
Security reasons.
Right. Okay, let's go to our next web page. Yeah, it's, rather good news. Syrian army purges holy shrine of militants. We know that there was some damage caused and done to the holy shrine of, the sister of Imam Hussein.
Yes, a couple of sites have been shelled by the militants.
Peace be upon her. So let's go to our next web page. This is German, new German foreign minister, actually. Yeah. He backs Iran's participation in Syria talks. So Germany was one of the countries which actually supported Iran's
participation. Yes, that somehow reflects the kind of realistic approach towards the issue. Things on the ground, I mean, the common sense is somehow guiding many different players that, okay, we should accept the reality on the ground. And in that sense, it's somehow a reflection of how realistic are the Europeans.
And probably that's the reflection of the EU viewpoint, because you know that Germany
somehow
has a big say in the
EU. They are not just the same as the United States as it used to be a couple of years ago.
I mean, about Germany's position in the EU. So yes. Probably when Germans are saying that, probably yes, exactly. It also reflects mm-hmm. that. Okay, let's go to our... I think this is a very interesting picture, isn't it? We have Jack Straw and then...
In Taiwan, yeah, a very rare visit.
Right.
British, former British.
If you look at those two flags, probably in the background, I think yeah. It's very interesting. And also the Iranian MP, who is also the Iranian head of the
it
British
was a good
Iranian
beginning, I mean, to
friendship.
Rebuild
yes.
Iranian-British relationship. And I hope that that goes ahead with the more tangible results.
Right. Let's go to our next web page. This is from Fast News Agency, and Turkish envoy stresses Iran's participation in Geneva II conference. I think it's interesting that the policies of Iran and Turkey is really...
There have been ups and downs.
Right.
And now getting closer again
yes.
after a while of somehow, I mean... We are
and
so
also in Iraq, I think we had some
exactly.
Policy.
Iraq, Turkey,
similar
Iran.
Policies.
I mean, I think in my view, Tehran, Baghdad and Ankara, mm-hmm. I mean, how they manage to work together
right.
will have a huge impact on the future of Syria
right.
and in a wider sense in the region.
Right. Great. Let's go to our next web page. This is actually according to the Yahoo News website, and it says that the Syrian conference without Iran will not succeed. So this is also according to Rouhani, President Rouhani, so that's another, it shows that I think we've had lots of, developments relating to Iran's participation. Probably shows that that Iran's participation is at the end of the day is very important, I mean, whether it participates or not, because so many players yeah. are talking about it.
And it may happen, I mean,
yes.
there are signs that at the very last moments maybe the United States will reconsider its position
right.
and we will see.
We have to wait a couple of weeks, I think. Okay, let's go to our next web page. Probably that's the last.
This is the end one.
Yes, I think that's the last, actually. No last web page. I think we've got... Right, I think we've got just 1 minute. And that leaves us with time for just one question. Probably that question just in less than a minute. First, Professor Yari... Professor Yari, what's your prognosis of the future of Syria in less than a minute?
Very difficult to say, but I think Syria is very important for the region, and there is a need really for everybody to come together in order to stop this bloodshed in Syria.
Right.
So in that sense, I think Iran has a role to play. If Iran is seen as part of the problem, it should also be part of the solution. So in that sense, I think there is a need really for Iranian diplomacy to be more active,
right.
To show to Americans, because we are talking about American really, American refusal of or conditional acceptance of Iranian participation. So Iran, in the context of nuclear issue, in the context of opening up to the Americans and so forth, convince the Americans of the need for Iran to participate
right.
in order really to save Syria. And not only Syria, because we know that Lebanon is in a very, very difficult situation, and Iraq
right.
also.
Thank you very much indeed. So unfortunately, that's all the time we've got. I do apologize to Professor Khan, but you're optimistic, I think, about the future of Syria.
I hope that 2003 has been a very bloody, sad year for Syria. I hope in 2014 we're going to see somehow the beginning of a solution.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. So thanks to both our guests. We had Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani and also Professor Hushang Hassan Yari. Thanks very much also to you, our dearest viewer, for having taken the time to watch this week's Central Stage. Have a great week. Thank you very much.